Alrighty, folks, we're going to call this meeting to order at 6.07 p.m. Welcome to you all. And before we get into announcements, or before we get into attendance, I just want to let you know that a little while ago today I received the formal elections results from the Chief Returning Officer. It came after late ads, which is why it isn't on here, but it'll be tabled in the following council meeting. But it appoints us five new members of council. So welcome for any of you that are here. You'll be getting a more formal welcome from email from me in the coming days, and it'll outline some of the other things. But because I just got this notice before the council meeting happened, it means you're official, so you can vote, and you're actually official members. Hooray! So welcome to those of you that are here, and you are already on my attendance list. So as always, Councillor Binchik, do you have a point of parliamentary
review?
Actually, that's not a bad idea at all. Is Councillor Horvat here? Just raise your hand in the back there. Hello. Councillor Malik? Yes, hello.
Hello.
Councillor Hansra?
Hello.
That's left. Hello. Councillor Lamb? Not here. Councillor Sim? No? Okay, so we will meet them next time. Excellent. And I encourage you to introduce yourself after the meeting or during recess if we have a recess. And for those of you that are brand new to this game, things are a little bit formal around here at times when they have to be. But if you ever don't know what's going on, the beauty is you can just raise your hand or raise your placard if you have it. And just say point of parliamentary inquiry and then ask me a question. And you can do that at any point in the meeting and I will explain to you in layman's terms what's going on. If you haven't already, you can grab the agenda packages there, and of course, members of the public are welcome to grab our agenda packages as well. So with that, we will, as always, begin with attendance. President Kuzmu. Vice President Chellen. Vice President Woods.
Present.
Vice President Lay.
Present.
Vice President Lau.
Present.
Governor Kelly.
Present.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, for any of the new folks, if I mispronounce your name, please correct me. Councillor Battelle.
Present.
Councillor Borden.
Present.
Councillor Mills. Councillor Hanwell.
Present.
Councillor Bannister.
Present.
Councillor Chavone.
Present.
Councillor Mohammed.
Present.
Councillor Gruelke.
Present.
Yeah, she's here. Councillor Minarski.
Present.
Councillor Valdez.
Present.
Councillor Corbett. Councillor Horvat.
Present.
Councillor Redman.
Present.
Councillor Malik.
Present.
Councillor Hamid.
Present.
Councillor Hansra.
Present.
Councillor Lamb. Councillor Morris.
Present.
Councillor Sim. Councillor Nguyen.
Present.
Ms. Bergeron for Councillor Champagne.
Present.
Councillor Speakman.
Present.
Councillor Hodgson.
Present.
Councillor Huang.
Present.
Councillor Zhang. Okay, after we're done attendance, if you wouldn't mind just coming down here and writing your name down so that I know who you are. Councillor Grahan.
Present.
Councillor Binchik. Councillor Douglas, and Mr. Dumichel. Okay, and as I mentioned to the new folks, if at any point you have questions, rise on a point of parliamentary inquiry. I will also be happy to sort of provide you a little bit more question and answer opportunity. You're welcome to email me or set up a time to meet with me, and I can walk you through it, particularly if this is your first time on council. Only other announcement, our next meeting of council is on Tuesday, November the 19th. With that, we will move into presentations. Item 2A, Student Mental Health at the U of A by Dr. Robin Everall, sponsored by Vice President Lau. Do we have a seconder for that motion? Thank you, Councillor Nguyen. Any objection to hearing that presentation? Seeing none, we will get started. Come on up. So you have 30 minutes combined for question and presentations. You're
all
welcome
right.
to take as
and
much
as
you like.
What do I push to make this?
Let's
oh my!
Here.
All right, there we go.
So this should move
okay.
back and forward.
Well, thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today. You're going to have to excuse me. I'm fighting the never-ending cold. For those of you who were part of this student union body last year, you will recognize me because I came to speak to you at that point. Let me just give you a little bit of background to who I am and why I'm here. My name is Robin Everall. I actually come out of the Department of Educational Psychology as a professor. I was the chair of the department there until 2011. In 2012, I accepted the position as a provost fellow to do an investigation for the then provost, Carl Amrine, into the state of student mental health services here on campus, as well as how did they compare to other institutions across North America. We have all kinds of best practice. We have all kinds of institution sizes. So it was actually quite a big job. That took a year of investigation, and when that was completed, I moved into the position of Associate Dean of Students, so I worked with Dr. Frank Robinson up on the fifth floor. I'm a psychologist by training, and I'm sure that you'll see that kind of rear its ugly head at times as we go through this. Just so you know, at the end of this presentation, it shows where on the website you can access this, and I understand that it's already been distributed to you, but just in case you want to look at it again, it is under the Provost website, under Information, Student Mental Health. So the mandate that I had was pretty clear. Initially, it appeared to be pretty clear. And the more I got into it, the muddier it got. So the question really was, how do we provide mental health services to students? Are the services that we provide what students actually need? Are they responsive to student needs? Are they appropriate? Do they fit with the way students look for services now, etc.? What about capacity and how we offer those services? I will tell you over and over again, it does not matter how many services we offer on this campus, it will never be enough. It's the old, if you build it, they will come. So the more we build, the more demand there is. But keeping that in mind, how is it that we really serve the majority of the student population to the best that we can? So how do we increase our capacity? And how is it that we provide adequate supports? And you'll see through this that I have modified student mental health to be student supports. Health and wellness, mental health, emotional health, spiritual health. So what are we doing? This is really a strategic foundation. That's what it's intended to be. And it also is to provide an operational framework. So in my report, if you've read it, if you had time between 2:15 and 2:30 a.m. one night, it's really intended to provide a strategy and a framework for the 54 recommendations that have been made in that report. It really is designed to put the student at the center. And as you know, the structure of our services have been very stable for many years. And so it really was a matter of taking a look at how are services offered at other universities? Do they fit with what we have? Do they meet the way students are looking for services now? So putting the student at the center and saying, if I were a student, what would I see? What would I be looking for? Was really important and was a... I think a really critical piece of this report for me. And I also wanted to look at the full spectrum of services. So I wasn't just looking at how many psychologists do we have on campus. I wanted to see what's inside departments, what's inside faculties, what do other institutions do? Are their services all located in one central place? So this is the framework that I used. And you'll see that what this says is personal. The yellow is it says personal. Oh, you can see it there. I can't see it here. So this is the whole spectrum. This is you, the student. And everything, not everything, but a lot of what goes into making this a good learning environment and a good educational experience for you, as well as being an experience that you grow and develop as a person. So you can't have one without the other. You can't have a piece of it. All of this is what goes into student mental health. And so that is really the centerpiece of this whole report. You'll see that from an institutional perspective, we can provide some of these things, but from an institutional perspective, we cannot provide them all. Okay, so everybody has to find their own place in this cycle, and it all funnels into the student at the center. This is the framework that I thought was really, really important. When we talk about student mental health services, we focus on the right-hand side of this. That's what we mean. But essentially, what we're doing then is we're talking about mental health as if it's only mental illness. And that is contrary to what we're trying to do on this campus. We are not only wanting to target students who are struggling with serious mental health issues, we want to target all students on this campus to provide mental health supports. So what you see is those in high distress are the ones who require the clinical services. That's a very small portion of our student population, actually, despite the NCHA data that indicates that so many students are struggling and distressed and anxious and depressed and having trouble sleeping. But that's usually an ebb and flow. That's part of the rhythm of a year. It's not their constant state. So what we were looking at, what I was looking at, is what do we do for those who are in moderate distress or are just going along fine now? But maybe they won't be going along fine 3 months from now or after they've written their midterms or their final exams. So you'll see here that what I did was I put the different kinds of services that I saw would be accessed by students or available to students, helpful to students, under each of those different areas. And so in that way, what you can see is that we're really talking about more than just the mental health center, university wellness, sexual assault center. We're looking at the full spectrum that supports students. There are 54 recommendations. Of those 54 recommendations, 34 of them have either been completed or are underway. So there are some large recommendations that are going to take 2 or 3 years for us to get underway or to build some structures around them so that they can become sustainable. But there are 10 major categories. The first is really making our commitment visible. And other institutions that have really good, solid mental health strategies make it one of the most visible things that they do on campus. That's not just the administration, but that's also the students and the student involvement and activity across the full spectrum of the institution. So making our commitment visible and focused and almost number one on the priority list is what is going to make this successful. If this becomes a flash in the pan, flavor of the month, we're concerned this year, but 2 years from now we're not so concerned anymore, then what we have not done is build sustainable changes that exist beyond you being on this campus and beyond the people who follow you. We want to expand our wellness initiatives, and we're doing that. We're doing that really well, and we want to make them visible. So, you know, in the notes, you're looking at the Heroes for Health program and the Wellness Project, and we have all kinds of student groups involved in mental health issues. We have all kinds of initiatives that people are taking on individually that are going to support a structure that is a sustainable structure. Of course, the never-ending issue of allocating dedicated resources in these budget times, that is, it's a challenge. It's a real challenge. However, as difficult as it may be, it is doable. We have to stay with a single voice about why we think this is important. And thank you to Adam, who goes and meets government all the time. He advocates for us, I'm sure.
We got money from the Alberta Health Services.
We got $3 million for 3 years, which really is 2 years, 2.5 years of services. And you'll see that a little bit later, that they've been put right into services for students. We need cohesive programming, and we need to engage our full community, which involves the alumni, advancement, etc. Students on campus and off. Our communication strategies are changing as we speak. That's one of the things that we have really had to start to focus on and put some money towards, to ensure that what we're doing is providing communications in ways that students actually can access them. All well and good for us to put things up where nobody can find them. And often on the U of A website, you can Google something and it doesn't pop up. You know it's there, but you have to go ask somebody who knows where it is to find it. We need campus-wide infrastructure, which is the support at the top. It's the administrative support that keeps the initiatives moving forward. We need to look at our orientations. I know that the Students' Union is responsible for a lot of the content, and they do an amazing job of orientations. But there is a large percentage of our student population that we're missing. For example, we have a very large percentage of students who come onto this campus in year 3 or year 4. Do we give them an orientation? No. Do they know about the campus? No. Where do they come from? They come from small institutions. Do they need our assistance? Absolutely, because they think they know what going to university is about. And they get here and they really struggle. So we need to look at not only who we provide orientations to, but how we provide them. We need to really focus on our international students, and we have to enhance our outreach initiatives. So this is what our student services looked like when I began in 2012. I started my position as Provost Fellow January 2012. What you'll see here is we have the University Wellness Services. We had the Mental Health Center, which is where the psychiatrists and the psychologists were housed. We had the Sexual Assault Center. We had the Health and Wellness Team. We had pharmacy, the Medical Center. Then as part of the Dean of Students, we had Aboriginal Student Services, Student Success Center, Specialized Disability Services, SDSS. Those things up there are the Office of Student Judicial Affairs, Finance, and the Careers, up in the top right-hand corner. Augustana, Campus Saint-Jean, Medicine, Dentistry, and Education all had psychologists in them that were hired by those faculties. Students could access those services, but you guys probably didn't know very much about them. They're kind of hidden. But they are definitely part of the overall infrastructure. There's also a psychologist in ISMIS. And then we have the Students' Union, where we have the peer support group, which is a really important group. Okay, are you ready? This is what we looked like a year later. What I did was, we had two social workers that worked in independent units. It violates the whole idea of what social work is about. They work as teams. So we pulled them out of those units and put them together as a team, which is now the community social work team. They do the community helpers program, which I strongly hope that you will participate in. It's about providing health and wellness services and being able to listen, providing supports. So you'll see that the community social workers are the green, the psychologists are the blue. So we've now got satellite offices, arts, science, engineering, and the graduate students in Triple Hall. We have psychologist and social worker in the Aboriginal Student Success Center, and in residence life, GSA International. So we have moved services out into the community. This is really what I want you to know, is that no longer do you just have to come to the Students' Union building to find services. And these services are full spectrum, from clinical services of really serious problems to needing support, needing to find out about housing, needing to know where to go to a food bank, needing to be able to make connections in the community. That's what the social workers do, because they have connections within our campus community as well as the community at large. So if you're having financial difficulties and you are stuck, can't get money on campus, community social workers can help to provide you with some resources in the community. So that this is what we're trying to do, is lower services out so that students have multiple points of access. One of the most important recommendations, and I said to William, I just wanted to focus on this a little bit, and then I'll give you a chance to ask questions. Are you all aware of the Helping Individuals at Risk program? How many are not? All right. Helping Individuals at Risk program is a program that is there to identify students who are at having behavioral issues, having behavioral difficulties, often creating distress in the learning community, often harm to self or others. Those people are identified by faculty, staff, and students, and we have an intervention program where we seek that person out and try to provide them with either academic supports or behavioral supports, if they need a psychologist or a psychiatrist, to tap them into supports that we have on campus. One of the things that we know is the majority of students are not aware of what services are on campus until year three or year four. And when they really need them, it's usually year one, year two, year three. So what I'm proposing is that we extend this program, this Helping Individuals at Risk program, so that it's not solely behavior. It's not just because I'm behaving badly or people are concerned about my mental health and I'm saying that I don't want to be here anymore and I think I'm maybe going to take a walk off the bridge. We have indicators, and there's all kinds of research that shows us that students who are struggling academically can lead to emotional difficulties. That if we can intervene and provide some structures and supports around students who are struggling academically, their problems stay minimal. They do not expand into more full-blown mental health issues. And that is really, really critical. Other institutions that have used an early alert program have found that their student retention rates increase, student success increases, the number percentage of students who fail their courses decreases, so that by reaching out to students, what we're saying to them is, because you're here, you matter. Students say, I got to campus, all I have is a number. And what this program is about is, because you have a number, you matter. Because you have a number, we can pay attention to you and say, hey, did you know that we can help you do this, or we can provide this kind of service to you. So it's to provide academic guidance, to talk about available options. It is a software program that is totally and completely confidential. Faculty members can issue reports of concern, but they cannot access any information. It is completely housed in a separate location, not affiliated with any faculty or office other than the auditor, the university auditor, and the Helping Individuals at Risk and the University Safe Disclosure and Human Rights Office are housed under her portfolio. So it's totally separate from any academic unit on campus. I just said to you, part of what we're trying to do is enhance the student experience by reaching out and saying, did you know that if you're not doing well in your exams, we have courses on how to take multiple choice, We have courses on how to write essays. We have courses, workshops that you can access, but you need to know about them. We really want the faculty and the students to start to collaborate a little more and to pay attention to each other a little bit more. This early alert helping individuals at risk program helps faculty members and sessional instructors to pay a little bit more attention to the students that they're teaching, to be a little bit more observant. And we will train them in how to do that. So that if I come in and I look okay for the first 3 weeks, and by week 7 of the course, I look like I'm not the same person, why would a faculty or sessional instructor or even a fellow student not say to somebody on campus, you know, we've noticed that Robin is really having some trouble, and maybe somebody could reach out. I'm going to keep this really short. This is just a diagram that you'll see in the report of how that early alert and helping individuals at risk program will work. And I'm not going to go into it now, but what you will see is that there are ways to divert students to be able to access different kinds of services depending on what the issue is. Whether that's going to see a faculty advisor, whether it's going to see somebody in the finance office, whatever it is. So all services will be available through this structure to students. So this is what I want to leave you with. We really need to rethink how we advance and support student mental health. The most powerful body on this campus is students. The most powerful interventions on this campus are peer-to-peer. It's all well and good for me to tell a student something, but if you, a fellow peer, tells them something, it sounds different, it's heard differently. So I think that what we need to do is really continue to have a conversation, and I'm going to rely on you to be doing this. How do we have students take ownership so that they have a little bit more awareness about how to assist when they're observing students who are struggling, either academically, emotionally, behaviorally? How is it that we can create a campus where students say, hey, you're the person that I'm looking at right now, you look like you need some help, are you okay? That is the most powerful tool that we have. We will put all the structures in place that we possibly can, but unless you take up the mantle, unless you decide that you want a campus where people feel like they're noticed, nothing that we do will really have as much power. So ultimately what we're trying to do is create another culture, a culture that feels more like a community. When you think about the University of U of A, people go, well, I don't understand how it works. Well, you know what? You're working in a structure that's the size of Red Deer. It's the size of Red Deer. So, of course, it's complex. People get lost. Nothing makes sense. This faculty says, go do this, and that faculty says, go do that, and they're completely opposite. Of course, people get confused. So we need to create a culture where people are cared about even when they're struggling. We need to keep pace with the changing needs of students. I can't keep pace. I know others can. And we need to provide programs and services that are sustainable. So we can't just say, this is what we want. We have to be able to say, how can we implement some kind of program and ensure that when we build a structure around it, it will still be there in 3 years and not wither on the vine because there's no funding. So that's another one of those things that I'm keeping in my head as we move forward with the initiatives that come out of this report. So, with that, if you need to find it, there it is. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, I will start a list of questions here. All at once. Councillor Speakman?
Can I just go and
Yeah, go ahead.
Great. Thanks for your presentation. My question is about the psychologists within each faculty. How do students go about contacting those people?
What is going to happen is that the psychologists who are put out in satellite offices that are affiliated with the mental health center, the mental health center now has 3 psychiatric nurses that work there. You can go see them, or you can phone them, or you can email them, and they will do an intake. If you're in the Faculty of Science, they'll try to get you into that person who's working in the Faculty of Science. So it's still an intake process through the mental health center, but you do not have to go there in person anymore.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't get your name yet, but go ahead.
Finbar.
Thank you.
Is what earlier you mentioned the lack of orientation resources available to students transferring for entering at a later point than the first second year. I know that you mentioned the Center for Student Development does offer a program. Are you familiar with it? Do you think it achieves that at all, or is it kind of like lost in the?
I think that we have lots of room for improvement. We know in developmental literature that children need to hear things, and I'm not calling you children, but this is learning, right? Children need to hear things 7 times before it starts to register. And I, as an adult, need to be told many, many times before information registers. When I'm overwhelmed, I shut down, just like you do. So you come into a 2-day orientation, and you just bombarded with information, and you feel it's just too much, you shut down. So I think that we can do a good job in terms of our actual orientation content, but we may need to think about how do we deliver that in segments. Do we do something on a weekly basis? How do we put it on the web? How do we share that information with students who need it on a on-time kind of structure.
Councillor Hanwell?
Thank you very much for the presentation as well. I'm just wondering, it's kind of one of one of the most important questions, but my least favorite, I think. And that would be, what's the exit strategy kind of thing? So we have this structure that seems like it would work really well, but we're really, when we think about it, only a few years away from running out of money, essentially, right? Like running out of that grant. So what happens then? Is it just kind of an empty structure? Or if Adam doesn't end up, or we don't end up getting another grant, what happens then?
That's the best question that there is. Because it has taken a lot of time and effort to put this structure into place. It has taken a lot of talking to convince people that it's a good way to go. So part of what we are doing on a daily basis is trying to put together a plan so that this is a continuing, ongoing, base-funded initiative. That is a bit of a challenge right now, but the world ebbs and flows. And so I think that what we can do is we can demonstrate the difference that it makes to students on campus. And when we do that, it helps us to make stronger arguments.
And
also, the other piece is that this is also best practice. There is no other institution that I know of that has a community social work team. So we are setting a standard of doing things differently, and I think that with the provincial government, they like initiatives that are new, that are transferable, where we are actually making a contribution to other institutions across the province. So as long as we can stay ahead of the game, I think we have some legs to be able to claim maybe sustain funding.
Parliamentary
Governor Kelly?
Yeah. Should a non-councillor wish to ask a question, how might they go about doing so?
Their best approach would be to ask a member of council to raise a placard on their behalf, and then that member could defer their speaking term.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Councillor Bannister?
My question has been answered. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Morris?
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the presentation.
I was wondering if you could clarify or go into more detail about how the mental health department is going to bridge that communication gap between faculties, specifically with smaller faculty.
Okay. Communication gap in terms of not having services placed inside of them?
And not knowing what the services or what the mental health structure necessarily is.
Okay. Good question. We have been putting together a whole new communications plan. We have people now who are focused really, really pretty predominantly focused on how do we communicate out to students. It means that we have to take a look at the handbooks and revise the handbooks. Cornell has a fabulous student handbook. They also have a fabulous faculty handbook. So what I've done is I've been in contact with them to see if I can use these as the framework for ones that are here. We have to do 100 different ways to communicate. We need the students' union to communicate. We need to be able to provide services or to provide information so that it doesn't matter which angle you're looking from, you're going to be able to find it. So we have a team that are working on that and have started working on that. It's going to be a bit of a long project, but definitely we have to come up with a strategy, and any strategies, any suggestions would be graciously accepted and highly valued.
Governor Kelly, did you have a question, or was it just the point of...
Yes, no. I do have a question. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to actually defer that question, however, to Mr. Trent.
Thank you for your presentation. I wanted to ask about the IAR program. And right now, I'm in the impression that it's in the planning stage and you're trying to implement that in.
There is an HIAR program. There is a Helping Individuals at Risk program already in place. There is a policy and procedure. It's been in place for the last 3 years. So what I'm trying to do is augment it to expand it so that it includes academic risk as well as behavioral risk.
To get a better understanding of the HIAR program, would a student need to be screened in order to participate? And is the screening process similar to if they had to go to the mental health center and
no.
to see a psychologist?
No. Students aren't screened for this. So if I'm having a difficult time, Adam is going to phone up the Helping Individuals at Risk program and say, I want you to know that Robin Everall is having a difficult time. The Helping Individuals at Risk coordinator would then contact me to say, there's been an expression of concern, would you like to come and see me? Or would you like to go to your faculty advisor? Is there something that we can do to help you? So no, there is no screening process. This is a reaching out to provide support process. And of course, the student has every right to say no. We can't mandate that they go seek help or go talk to their faculty advisor or drop courses or change programs if they're in the wrong program. But at least we can offer.
Okay. Unfortunately, I have a couple names on my list, but we have run a little bit over time already, so we are over. Councillor Mills?
How many? I
have two. So with that, we will close our presentation, and thank you very much, Dr. Everett.
Dr.
Everall. You have your USB key, do you?
Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. All right. With that, we will continue on to executive committee reports. Any executive committee reports? Vice President Woods.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll first off apologize for my fellow executives who at this moment have to exit for a meeting. I don't know what meeting, but I assume it's important, otherwise they wouldn't be missing council. As well, for those of you who may not have received the WhatsApp, President Kuzmu is exposed tonight. He's unfortunately way behind and would like to get accepted to grad school, therefore he needs to take tonight to put those applications through. You might look down upon that excuse, however. graduate school is a legitimate reason in my books, and he genuinely has no other time, so I would recommend giving this one to him. That being said, I am here to answer as many questions as you may have for the whole executive committee. If I can't answer them, I will defer them, and they'll be answered later by my fellow executives. On my own note, only thing that I got two things I'd like to touch on, actually all relating to a question that I received from Councillor Patel via email. I'd like to, rather than just simply responding to her, I figured I'd bring up her question and address it with the council. Councillor Patel, and I believe along the lines of whether or not I would consider the on-campus voting station to be a success. I would absolutely consider it to be a success, and I would further add, well, first of all, also, thanks to Mr. Evan Schramm, I can say your name, General Counselor, who was one of the people that helped out with the voting station on that particular day. However, when defining it as a success, granted, between the three institutions, there were not as many students present and voting as I would have liked. However, with that being said, we did achieve big numbers. We had over 1,000, just under 1,000 people for our advanced votes of all three institutions. That is quite impressive considering it's an advanced voting station. I believe City Hall did not have that many votes in the same amount of time, which was, as I said, quite impressive. But the best thing was that we met with Elections Alberta right afterwards. This is the other part of my report here I'd like to talk about. But as I said, myself and a few members of CAUSE and ASEC met with Elections Alberta to discuss the recent changes that have been made to the Elections Act, as well as the next provincial election moving forward. They were incredibly impressed with... I always forget
Thank
that
you,
I always
Vice President.
Take a few minutes for this one.
Someone okay.
Ask me about voting stations, that'd be great.
Thank you, Vice President Woods. Any other execs? Vice President Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize, I had to run off to the long-range development plan focus group with William at 7th, who has a trek to tell us after that. But just the one big note, just a huge thank you and props to Vice President Woods for getting $13 million for the CNC. And so the context of that, we're doing a sub-renovation and we've been waiting for the government to give us an order in council. So we got good news on October 30th when the result of the first part of our report. So big props to him. We can breathe easily. We'll have an atrium for our renovations.
Request of information. So is that $13 million that wasn't budgeted for before? So it's like bonus money? Or
no. It was fun. We were just waiting for it to come in. So now that we have it, we can go along. We had, from the council meeting in the summer, we had contingency plans, like if we didn't get the money, but we got the money, so it'll be fine.
Thank you. Vice President Lau.
Thank you, Speaker. I'd also like to apologize, but I'd like to apologize for my disgusting facial hair. For anyone that would like to also participate, or if anyone would like to participate in November but has yet to join a team, please do join the UASU team. We're up against the Students Association of McEwen University, and they're currently ahead of us by like $100 in donations. So you can either join the team or get a spare $100, please feel free. Besides that, we still have registration open for Campus Cup. Campus Cup is the weekend of November 22nd to the 24th. And registrations are open until the 18th, but if you register a team now, you won't have customized t-shirts. We're also opening up registration right away for antifreeze, so if any one of you have heard about antifreeze or want to participate, now's the time to start to plan for that. Antifreeze is our, it's almost like a welcome back event, let's say, in January, and it's like an amazing race. It's like a reality show where student teams get to compete against one another, and it's just a lot of fun. So thanks. If you want to have any more questions about my council reports, feel free to email them over to me. Or perhaps Mr. Woods would try to help me answer them as well. But thanks for now.
Thank you.
Good council.
Any board and committee chairs wishing to report? Councilor Binchik?
I'll just open up my report. I actually wrote it out. So first of all, in the last meeting, we're really looking into how to increase council's visibility on campus, and the main idea was to really get council out to campus-wide events as counselors, not just students at the university. So that's why we have the sticky notes to see what actually prevents you from attending more events and perhaps to explore some ways for us to eliminate those barriers. Also, we talked about the connection between faculty association as well, faculty associations as well as council, and there was quite an idea to have council ambassadors actually going out to faculty association meetings and reporting back to either all other council representatives from council or to council as a whole, so that all members are more aware of what the students are actually up to. And I have been in talks with Dustin since that idea came up. We are thinking about either having council ambassadors at FA meetings or perhaps even sometimes having counselors attend COFA meetings. So there are quite a lot of ideas right now. Also, we discussed the importance of compiling a goals document for council, similar to the one that is generated by the executive, so that we can actually stay accountable to our goals. And we have been working on fixing the emails that are not working right now. I know Craig and Catherine are working on some other solutions so that it can start working much quicker. And also, if you wish to attend our next meeting, that would be great. We'll be talking about how to engage with the international students more as counselors. And I'll see you more next time.
Thank you, Councilor Vichik. Any other chairs? Nope. Okay, we will move on to question period. We have, I suppose technically on here, two written questions, but there's sort of two questions each, so I'm just going to split them up. So the first one, Vice President Woods, I'm basically going to direct any exec questions to you, and if you can take them, great. If you can't, no.
Those two questions I'd like to defer to President Lay, or Vice President Lay.
Okay, so because he's not here, unfortunately, you may need to ask those questions another night.
The parliamentary inquiry.
Yes, Councillor Bannister.
So if we have a question for an executive member who is not here, what is the best way to go about asking them that question in your recommendations?
There's two ways to do it. I mean, number one, you can always email them or meet with them sort of offline and get your question answered. If you want a formal question answered on the record, you could certainly ask it next council meeting. So either ask it in person or ask again for the written question to be included on the next order of paper. Okay, so unfortunately, Vice President Lay is no longer here for those questions. Question 5B, question 1, Vice President Woods, are you able to talk to that one at all?
No, Mr. Speaker, unfortunately 5A and 5B are not within my purview.
Okay, number 2, perhaps I'll direct this one to the Chair of GAC, if you care to take this one.
So I talked to Josh about it, and he's looking into it, so I don't know if that like doesn't help, but he's looking into it, and he said that he'll answer your question as soon as possible. So that's all I know, because I didn't really know the answer either. So. Sorry.
Okay. Yes, Councillor Mahon?
Can we ask you a question?
You can. Generally speaking, because generally all I can answer is procedural questions, you can in fact ask them as a point of parliamentary inquiry, and that doesn't necessarily have to be sort of part of question period per se, but you can certainly rise on a point of parliamentary inquiry and I'll answer it. Yes, so, yeah?
This can be about like students who need stuff.
I'll try your question and see what we can come up with.
Okay, so this is about the student term spacing. On the 6th floor sub, there's a bunch of empty offices, and the desk is the only DFE to have no space. So I was wondering, how long do you expect those spaces to stay empty for, the ones on the 6th floor?
Okay, that one I will pretend is an actual question towards me, because, yeah, it's not really a procedural council question. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of details on that. That question is probably best directed to Vice President Lay. It's my understanding that with the ongoing sub-renos, the space up there is sort of shared right now. I'm not sure how it's being allocated in that regard. But, again, your question is probably best directed to Vice President Lay. Okay, with that, I will take questions. Governor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for the Vice President External. Could you please tell us more about the voting station?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Board of Governors, Representative.
I will first of all state that if you guys do have questions not related to my portfolio, I'll try my best to answer them. If they're urgent, I know most about Dustin and Petros' area of work, so there's that. As for voting stations, again, just trying to answer Councillor Patel's question that she emailed me, I would just state that it is very likely that we'll have a voting station present in the Students' Union building for the 2016 provincial election. That is pretty huge. We're incredibly happy. For that, goes both 85% to Vice President External Iskander and Vice President External Kuzmu. This is, as I often say in this position, these things that we advocate for and lobby for take a great deal of time to be implemented. This has been the work of many previous years VP Externals, and I'm very happy to finally put the final, nail in the coffin on that one. Maybe a good metaphor. Either way, that's a very good thing to hear. So ultimately, yes, I would answer Councillor Patel. The on-campus voting station was a great success, not just because of our numbers, but because we proved to Elections Canada and Elections Alberta that the students' unions in Edmonton are, in fact, capable of hosting a voting station, and that is ultimately we needed to prove. The fact that it went smoothly, that there were no major problems, and that everybody that came in got to vote is simply phenomenal. I'm just going to take this opportunity in a few minutes first of all, I won't be around for the next couple of weeks. I personally shall be on vacation. I promise there'll be no drunken stupors ending in activities that would elicit value. At least I won't be recorded for them. That was a joke. And also, I would add that this No Shave November stuff is bad. And thank you, Gateway, for not allowing me to shave. That is all.
Thank you. Vice President. And just a friendly reminder for the new folks, what I'll do is if you have a question, just raise your placard and then I will acknowledge you and then you can put it down on the speaker's list. So, okay, so did I just see yours? Okay. Councillor Speakman.
Thank you. It was just here. So, my question was about the Vice President of Lay, but if Vice President Woods could speak to the just kind of like the sub-renovation developments in general. I thought the $13 million was like bonus $13 million, so I was all excited about how many new compost bins we could have. could you still speak to, like, I don't know if you know anything about like what sort of multi-bin systems are going to be possible in the shiny new basement of stuff.
Is that either specific question surrounding the actual $13 million or shiny new bins?
More interested in the bins.
Unfortunately, I lack detail on the bins. I can touch on renovation monies and how that's working if anybody so chooses, but unfortunately, decompost bins, while I use them, are not in my portfolio. So, my apologies, Councillor Speakman.
Councillor.
In order, Mr. Speaker, okay.
That was sort of part of the same question.
So,
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear the
follow-up. So the way the money worked for those that didn't quite understand the process, so the government of Alberta has what's called the ACFA granting system, where essentially the government of Alberta has the best credit rating of any government in the world. That's because, you know, we have low taxes and always pay back your debt and et cetera, go to Alberta. So as a result, the government of Alberta will actually take out a loan on your behalf with their interest rate. So essentially, you get one of the best interest rates that you could get in the world. And they loan you the money for public projects. So universities will often do this to expand their capital buildings. And our general manager, Mark Dumichel, thought it would be a good idea this past year that we finance renovations through this. We get a much better interest rate. We are a public institution, so the university could do it on our behalf. And that was the plan moving forward. The issue is that, as many of you know, especially those of you who have worked with the government can be a very slow organization, especially when it involves signing anything, especially surrounding the moving of monies. So in order to get this $13 million to finance the renovations, we need the Minister of Infrastructure, the Minister of Advanced Education, and the Minister of Finance. It was a little bit scary there for a while, simply because it didn't look like things were moving as quick as we wanted them to. There were backup plans in case we didn't get the loans in a timely manner. However, thanks to what I can only say is my successful stalking skills, we had the money approved on the 30th of October, which, as I said, is huge. I believe Minister Horner was the last to sign it, and he just wanted to know how we were going to finance it. The last time I talked to him, I said, oh, there's a great thing called student referendum and democracy, and he took that answer really well. So Ultimately, the money's been approved, the renovations are, now there's nothing in the way, and everybody in the Students' Union had a great sigh of relief that day, which I'm sure your honorable speaker can speak to as well. Ha!
I think I heard Mr. Dumichel's cheer from my office. So.
Yes.
Councilor Nguyen.
Oh, my question is for Councilor Hinchin. She was talking about Skit, and I know that she finished on time, so I think she had a few more things to say, so I'm curious as to what's going on.
Let me get back to my report. okay, we also had this quite controversial idea, Skit, that I thought I would at least put out there, and maybe it will give you an idea of how exciting the discussions can be at Skit. There was a problem brought up that some counselors are not always perhaps paying attention during the meetings, and we were wondering how, what would happen if, for example, we would all decide not to bring laptops in for like 1 month. Like, would that increase the attention? I know it's been done at Faculty Association, and it's been working very successfully. So we do have some quite on the edge ideas, and I definitely encourage you to come to the meetings. As essentially, SCAD is all about council and improving council's connection to all the students. So it's great to see feedback. And, yeah. But thank you, Councilor Quinn.
Thank you. Councilor Mohammed.
Yeah, this question is directed towards Corey Hogsett. He's the chair of the DFU Review Committee, or ICU, right? Okay, you're on it. So this is directed towards anyone who's on that committee. So what is a DFU? They're a DFU that sponsors refugees for the every year. So essentially, all their funds go towards tuition, and none of the funds go towards things like the TOEFL exam, transportation, or medical exams, costs that can cost upwards to $3,000. So the question is, if WSCA puts forward a referendum to increase the amount to cover these costs, which in reality is like half a cent, I heard that they would renew it every 5 years in order for it to stay, stay constant. So if that's true, then what's the rationale behind this grandfather clause?
Is there anyone on GAC that wishes to take that?
Okay.
Or sorry, audit? Or sorry, DFU Review Task Force, thank you. Councillor Hodgson, maybe defer to Councillor... Okay, that's something different. Councillor Hodgson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question, Councillor Mohammed. The specific part of the bylaw you're referring to has been in there for a while. Essentially what it is there's a class ABCD fees. A and B are what currently all fees are under. C and D fees have an additional clause that would put them on a 5-year referendum cycle as well as being online alphabetical. So, at least the rationale I'm aware of for that specific part of our bylaws is to keep DFUs current. They go to referendum every 5 years so that in an average student's lifetime they can vote on fees that they're paying and whether they want to continue paying them or not. That's a pretty simple explanation. I can get into a lot more, but that's essentially the justification of why they would be on a referendum cycle. Again, they're not right now. Once they go for an increase, they would move over to this, currently their Class B fee. If they went for an increase, they would become the Class B fee and be susceptible to these two additional criteria.
Thank you. Councillor Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for Vice President Woods. I was curious, do you think the elections office has enough support currently?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I assume you're obviously talking about our CRO. I don't have the best answer to this question. That would more likely be suited for Vice President Schellen. Actually, Vice President Schellen or President Kuzma would be your two best bets there. I would simply say that from my own personal experience, not out of the Executive Committee, the Elections Office has typically had an adequate amount of support available, especially with the DRO during general elections and executive elections. With that being said, there's always room for improvement, and I would ask that you further clarify with specifically Vice President Chen.
Request for information?
Yes.
Did you say inadequate or inadequate?
Adequate. We have typically, in my experience, always had an adequate elections office. However, with that being said, there's always room for improvement. And again, just direct that to VP Chandler.
Thank you. Councillor Hensrow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for Vice President Woods. In your report, you mentioned you had a meeting with MLA David Zhao, and he asked you questions. He told you he was going to ask questions, and he asked three questions. I was just wondering what those three questions were, who they were directed to, and what were the responses to those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, I would actually love to answer this. There has been, and this is not something that I would typically say publicly, but here we are. There has been more and more growing discontent, from my experience within the PC caucus, specifically surrounding the cuts to post-secondary education. Evidently, constituents weren't just going to sit around and take it while they cut our education. So, as I said, more and more PC MLAs seem to be standing up. And recently, MLA David Jiao from the Klung asked some questions of the Deputy Premier. And they weren't planted questions. They weren't given them to in advance. They were straight up asked. The first question was how the Deputy Premier could ensure educational quality was going to be protected despite the cuts. The second question was why, in particular, arts programs have been cut predominantly in the province since these cuts took place, and why not other programs. The third was how the government could justify such enormous executive compensation within the province, specifically surrounding our university president and other administration. The reason this is significant is because this is a member of the Deputy Premier's own party calling him out for post-secondary cuts. You barely ever see government MLAs calling out their own party over any issue, and you're seeing more and more of it, specifically around post-secondary. So hopefully this trend will continue, and hopefully we will see a reinvestment into PSE before next year's budget. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Councillor Schifoni.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question will be directed at Vice President Woods, but it's really to Vice President Chellen. In regards to the leadership initiative, and the report here just mentions that they, Petros and him met with the board chair. What exactly came from that meeting, and where we stand on that? I'd like to put the document up, but where we stand on that, and what came from that meeting?
Certainly. I can't comment on the specific meeting with the board chair, unfortunately. I believe that just happened today or yesterday. I heard a brief summary that the meeting went quite well and that the board chair was open to our concerns. Whether or not that actually changes anything, I don't know. But moving forward, I think that it's, I mean, you guys all know about the leadership college and why there are concerns there. And I think it's quite important that the students' union stand up in this regard. And I'd like to give props to Vice President Chellen for working so very hard on this file. Evidently, this much money for 144 students does not uplift the whole people. It uplifts 444 people, and that should not be the case. So, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bannister.
Thank you. My question is for Vice President Woods. It is very much a question that should be directed to Vice President Lay, but as he is not here, I shall see if you can shed any light on the issue. In Vice President Lay's report, he mentioned how there will be an electric sign put up at the Daily Grind. I was wondering if you knew what this sign is being used for, and if like the environmental impact of the sign has been looked into, and if it's necessary.
Merci, Monsieur President. That's for you, Mr. Champagne.
What?
That's French for thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry. to answer the question, we are currently looking at it. It was just a matter of design. I know that the whole image behind the Daily Grind is supposed to be kind of like a newspaper stand, so it was kind of going to go in line with that. I do not know whether or not the environmental impacts have been assessed at this point or whether or not there are any. However, I would clarify that with Vice President. I don't know, honestly. I'm not very good when it comes to lights and stuff. But I would clarify that particular question with Vice President Lay, and I'm sure he'll have a good answer for you. I'd say the speaker might be able to help me, but I don't think he's allowed to do that. So, yes.
Can I just have, like, a point of clarification?
You can request for
information. Yeah, I can request for clarification. So, is the sign a sign that says the Daily Grind?
If I'm not mistaken, it'll be a menu. Is it? It is? Well,
it's a banner.
I believe there was going to be a banner and an interactive screen, but again, I don't know. I believe it could be both. However, again, clarify that. If you want to look Vice President Lay before I continue digging, so.
Thank you. With that, we've now reached our first 15 minutes, and we need All we need is five placards, actually, to extend. So if there's five placards, there is very clearly more than five placards. So we will go for another 15 minutes.
I'm a funny guy, yes.
And in case, for the new people that may not be aware, if it's looking like I'm jumping around, what I always do is I give priority to folks that haven't answered a question or haven't asked a question yet. So if your name's on the speaker's list for a second time and it's looking like people are being asked questions in front of you, that's why. So Councillor Malik, right?
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to VP Woods, but it's actually for Josh Lee, that's not here. His report says it's been doing very well, right? So how well?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. this is a matter of... I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say here. The Daily Grind is doing incredibly well. Our profit margins public, I don't believe they are.
I'm not sure. If you're unclear, you could always move to go in camera, but I'm not sure.
I'll just say that because of it, we had the best September we'd seen in a very long time. Ultimately, the Daily Grind is more than we could have hoped in terms of success, and we hope that it continues as much. I think specifically just the quality of coffee that's really had an impact. I mean, it's the cheapest quality coffee you can get on campus right now. So, and I'm not just plugging that away. I'm actually addicted to their Vietnamese. So,
yes.
Exactly. Keep drinking the caffeine, folks. I know you need it.
Thank you. Councillor Graham? Councillor Douglas?
I had a question that was directed at DP Challen, but since it's not here, I was wondering what came about a possible meeting with the head of the Leadership Initiative and coming and talking to him.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Are you talking about meeting with Peter Meekinson?
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how that has gone yet. I would direct that one to VP Challen, unfortunately. Sorry, I don't have good information on that.
Councillor Morris?
My question would have been for VP Lay, but I'm going to direct it to VP Woods. It was brought to my attention that a student group wanted to have a bake sale in the SU building, and it was said that the policy of the SU is not to allow student groups to compete with the businesses within the SU. I'm just wondering the reasoning behind this policy, and do we put precedent on businesses rather than student groups?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would respond with that is, in fact, operating policy. There's another number of other stipulations in operating policy, such as, for example, you need approval if you're a politician that or you want cable and sub. It's the same thing with student groups, just in terms of competing with our businesses. However, with that being said, operating policy, it doesn't ever change, obviously, but it is open to interpretation, and I would further clarify with VP Lay on that particular one.
Councillor Speakman?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, good work answering all of the questions, or at least attempting to.
Great.
So the PAW Center and the Community Kitchen Project, do you know anything about that?
It's still in progress. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
So my question is specifically about if there are going to be opportunities for council to like help choose the... the RFP packages for retail and food space. I was wondering if there is going to be opportunity for council to input into the selection process for retail and food vendors in the PAW Center.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do not know what the VP Lau or VP Lay's intentions on that particular file are, or whether or not they want to make a decision themselves or bring it to council. So, I don't have a good answer to your question. I would say that both are in progress. So we were supposed to actually get a tour, the exact tour, a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, it had to be canceled. But to my knowledge, it's not on schedule, but it's moving steady, and it should be completed on the new timeline schedule, to my knowledge. Again, I would ask that for VP Lay or VP Lau. I would hope they would, but again, I can't speak for them. It's their portfolios. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Muhammad.
So it's about listening again. The reason why I'm asking about it so much is because the deadline's coming up to fill in the applications. So my question's about funding. So the on all the order reports you get, there's a section where the executive approves a certain amount of funds.
Yeah.
For example, you approve $1,300 for the Legacy Game, $3,000 for a flight to Ottawa, you and Kuzmu. And that happens every couple weeks. And in bylaw 3000, it states that there's $50,000 allocated to projects that come up through the year, $30,000 allocated to a contingency fund. So I was wondering if those funds could be transferred to WASC to assist them in the registration process, because all we're talking about, correctly, is peanuts and not half a cent in their total cost.
Request for information. Yeah. What is the deadline?
They usually put an application for January for the student to come the following year. So this is why I keep asking about WASC.
I don't blame you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, I'm really not good for DFUs. That was one. I was a bylaw guy when I was a counselor, and not, well, right. Which actually means
so,
I don't.
Yeah. So can I change Taylor to his?
Try. I might stop you if it's.
Okay. Convenient. So in relation to bylaws, then theoretically, couldn't I, as a member of bylaw committee, change the grandfather clause so that if was it go in the referendum, it wouldn't be declared a cap plus whatever, and they could just keep the money for the time being? Is that possible to just get rid of the grandfather clause next council meeting? Can't you just kind of grandfather clause the ethical for first principles or whatever?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe if you manage to move all that in motion, I believe that could work like your logic there. However, again, I would check that with VP Lay. Take it.
Can I move it now?
I don't know if the speaker...
I'm going to, unless Vice President Wood wants to add any more on the question, I'm going to take part of that as a point of parliamentary inquiry. So in terms of bylaw and how it's changed and so on. So bylaw can only be changed through two readings of council. So again, we have the first reading where we deal with the principles of the change in bylaw. It then goes to bylaw committee for drafting and then comes back in second reading with the technical changes. Now, I would caution with bylaws surrounding DFUs, and again, I don't have all the details on this, but in the past, when these particular bylaws have been changed, the Students' Union has on occasion sought a legal opinion because it affects not just the Students' Union, but also some of the other, I forget what the phrase is, the other body specified in the schedule of Bylaw 3000, because it binds us to things outside of that. That has happened in the past, and I believe there's a legal opinion on this matter somewhere. If anyone's interested in seeing it, you can get in touch with Nicole, and we may be able to pick that up to you. But to answer your question, number one, it requires basically two different readings to change bylaw. And number two, motions from the floor are incredibly unusual and would have to have a very good reason for being moved in that particular way. Does that clarify that, or do you have any other questions on that?
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes, Councillor Hanser.
But if a bylaw was passed first reading, a legal opinion could be added, potentially successfully succeeds. The legal opinion could be sought between the first reading and second reading.
I would think so, because if let's say potentially, hypothetically, a bylaw principle is changed, or a bylaw principle is approved in first reading and it goes to second reading, and during that time a legal opinion is sought and brought back that would suggest that that proceeding with that change might violate some fiduciary responsibility of the Students' Union, I would argue that would be then an appropriate time in which council could vote down, if they agreed with that interpretation, a second reading of that. Now, the timing to get a legal opinion, I'm not clear on. That's probably a question best to Mr. Dumichel. So.
What information?
Yep, council.
Does it have to go through first and second reading to just strike something in the bylaw? Because it's not adding anything there, just strike
an exception. Bylaw 100 outlines how bylaws need to be changed. And in fact, I can read exactly how it is so that there's no confusion on that. So it says, Bylaw 100, Section 11.1 says, Students' Union bylaws, B, are adopted, amended, or rescinded by two simple majority votes of Students' Council occurring not less than 7 days apart. So that's where that requirement comes from. Any other points of parliamentary inquiry before we proceed? Seeing none? Okay, Governor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Once again, I would like to defer my question to Mr. Trent.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for the Board of Representatives. Though we don't have to worry about it in the immediate future, if possible, I'd like you to elaborate on the backup plan of funding in case the funding would help certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, this is not an area that I have a great amount of knowledge. Needless to say, though, the Students' Union wouldn't just enter something, an agreement, or commit to anything where if things went wrong, we'd be completely bankrupt. Ultimately, the SU does have reserve funds available, which ultimately the options presented to Council when this was last discussed were, if we did not receive the government loan money, we could still do the renovations, just not to the procedures. Procedures extent that we could. Now, the glass, for example, would have had to have been changed. I believe there are a few other areas of the lower level that wouldn't have been as nicely renovated. However, we still could have afforded it. It just would have been a little bit of a strain. But ultimately, we were confident we were going to get the funding. It was a good public project. And it just took us hunting down a couple of ministers, and boom, it's good. So.
Thank you. Councillor Hansra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for the Board of Governors representative, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Kelly, in your report, you mentioned that you are working with Ms. Carson on an acknowledgement of Indigenous territories given for council. Would this come up to council in the near future for a vote? Is that your plan? I was just wondering about the plan.
Yes. Thank you for the question, Mr. Hansra. The statement of Indigenous acknowledging Indigenous territory has been something that actually was started last year. I began working on it with then Councillor Carson and a number of other councillors. And so, unfortunately, due to various other things happening that year, that sort of fell by the wayside. But before the end of my second term, I'd like to get that finished, because as if you take a look at the late editions, you will see that statement is currently in my report to council. So my preference would be that be somewhere more permanent, perhaps on the website. The University of Alberta at this time, for example, has a statement, similar statement, on the website somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where. So, but at this time, I'm just sort of trying to get momentum going on that again, and it will be brought before council, but not before proper consultation, meeting with perhaps faculty. I'm not exactly sure yet, but you can trust that it will be brought before council. If it needs to be, to be honest, I'm not even sure. Perhaps it could be referred to CERC, perhaps the executive committee. I'm not exactly sure what the most effective, efficient method might be to have that dealt with. But as I say, I'm happy to work with anybody who wants to work with me on the project. A number of other councillors have expressed interest in the statement, so I'd be happy to keep people updated, and will by my report as we move forward. So, thanks for the question.
Thank you, Councillor Binchik.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, point of information: is it okay if I ask a question to the floor and ask for it to be answered by a straw poll? Sorry, just like raise of hands.
Nope. Sorry, that's not. It's not really permissible by council. It's Robert's rules explicitly forbid, in fact, straw polls. So again, as I think I've said before, that's not to say we couldn't do it in the future, but if council wants me to permit those sorts of things, then council needs to change standing orders to sort of say that those things are allowed.
Parliamentary inquiry, couldn't you just suspend standing orders for her to put this?
You could.
And that's a vote, right?
Councillor Hansra, it's... You've been here before, haven't you? the councillor is correct that if you wanted to have a straw poll, you could make a motion to suspend the rules that disallow straw polls, and then if that motion passed, then you could take your straw poll, if that makes sense. Would you care to make such a motion?
Yes, please.
Okay, so a motion to suspend the rules to allow for straw polls. No, that would be the introduction of the motion. The motion to suspend the rules, you mean?
Yes.
So what we'll do actually is we will ask for a seconder first, and then we would have a vote on it. So is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Speakman, thank you very much. Yes, Councillor Champagne?
If there is a stop, are we obliged to participate in it?
No. No. Similar to any vote, in fact, with any vote, you can certainly abstain. Basically, an abstention doesn't have to officially be an abstention. If you don't vote yes or no, then you're abstaining. So, and again, I'm just going to double check. I don't believe suspension of the rules is debatable or amendable. No, it's not. Councillor Vinchik, you can provide an introduction, which is explaining what it does. You can't explain why you want to do it. That would be debate. So, yes, Councillor.
This is a non-debatable motion.
This is a non-debatable motion, so Councillor Binchik can introduce but cannot debate, if you care to introduce at all.
So I wish to make a straw poll because it will...
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you there. Sorry. As soon as you say because, that's getting into debate. So, okay, so requires two-thirds majority vote. All those in favor of suspending the rules, please raise your placards. Those opposed... That motion carries 14-5. Okay, so the rules are suspended. So now, if you wish, with your question time, you could take a straw poll.
Okay. I was wondering who is attending class talks so that I know whether this initiative is something really worth pushing for. So those of you,
I can facilitate it now if you want, because it's allowable. So those of you that yes have. Participate in class talks, you can raise your placard. Those of you that have not, you can raise your placard. Does that suffice, Councillor Binchik?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, Councillor Nguyen.
My question is for the external panel. You are going to CATSA's advocacy with Petros, and I was just wondering, it just seems like a long time, November 17th. 23rd. I was just wondering, like, what else is happening, and what you plan on getting out of it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, I was sad I couldn't mention this in a report, but I got this time issue. You see, so as Councillor Nguyen just stated, myself and Mr. Kuzmu will be leaving on the 17th for Ottawa to return on the following Saturday. A couple of things address why that such a long amount of time. Ultimately, the advocacy is a big part of the Students' Union, not just provincial advocacy, but federal advocacy. There's a lot of federal government issues that pertain to PSC, student loans, research funding, international student regulation, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, if I flew to Ottawa every week, that would incur quite the expense for the Students' Union. Instead, the organization we're a part of, the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, organizes 1 week where they get as many MPs as possible. I believe last year we met with over half of Parliament in that week. Where we just binge meet with everybody that we possibly can and go over our pre-budget submission, go over our priorities for the year just so that they know what students want. So ultimately, it is incredibly important for us to go there and represent the UASU in terms of federal advocacy. What am I going to be getting out of it? Well, first and foremost, it'll improve my advocacy capabilities as well as that of the president. It'll also give us a chance to talk about some of the issues addressing affecting the UASU in Parliament. And also, there's a genuine chance we might actually get some student loan asks passed. Myself and Ms. Amanda Nielsen, the chair of CASA and president of the Athabasca Graduate Students Association, have successfully received a meeting with Alberta Caucus when we're in Ottawa, which never happens. They don't meet with people as a caucus. But we're going to discuss the student loan changes in a pre-budget submission, and it's actually high likelihood that something might happen out of it. So I'm excited to say that, and hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you. Councillor Bannister?
Hello. This should be a question for Susan Kuzma, but seeing as he's not here, I'm introducing it to BC Woods. So, I would like to preface this question by saying that I have not personally had the chance to read this article yet. So, if there's inaccuracies, I apologize. But from a reliable source, I have heard that there has been an article posted in the Edmonton Journal, I think it was last week, stating that President Kuzmu is planning to facilitate a town hall to gauge student feedback about the potential off-campus move of the School of Business as well as the Departments of Fine Arts and Music and Design. I was wondering if you could provide any more details on this, specifically what, if this is the case, what the Students' Union is planning on doing to promote this town halls to get adequate student representation there.
Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll just say that I don't know for sure this is happening. I believe I did hear it mentioned, which means that they're likely moving towards it, but again, I can't speak for their decision as of yet. When it happens, if it happens, assumingly, just the usual methods of us trying to get people out to our town halls, social media, sub-TV, posters across campus, U of A events pages, just every avenue we can to let the campus know. Perhaps we'll go as far as talking to profs to let them know. That's actually a really good thing. If you're trying to get an event out, talk to, like, send a mass message to all profs, to all their classrooms. That's how we got people coming. But ultimately, just the regular means of getting people out. But I'm sure it would be a success if it did occur, and it's a conversation that should happen.
Point of information.
I will take it.
This is more of a procedural question for the Students' Union. I think what President Kuzma had requested was for the administration to hold a town hall. So should it be appropriate for the Students' Union to be, or does the Student Union, is it pressing for the Student Union to get the vote voice out, get the message out that there is a town hall meeting?
Oh, absolutely. If it is being hosted by the administration, which would be great, absolutely, we would do everything in our power to get students out for that because we would want a strong showing, especially if the administration was going out of its way to host it. Again, I would talk with President Kuzma in this particular file. Whether or not we're planning to host a town hall or we're pushing them to host a town hall, I'm sure one of those two is occurring. But again, I do not know.
Thank you. Councilor Hansra.
Right, this question is for Vice President Woods. Right, again, great work tonight. Great work throughout your year so far. My question is regarding, my understanding is that you've been meeting with as many MLAs as possible.
Yeah.
Is this limited to just Edmonton MLAs or all MLAs? And who have you met with so far?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I could provide you with a full list at a later time. I can't list all the names at this point. However, that's the purpose of, and why we're a part of CAUSE, the provincial lobby group. I would normally just have access to Edmonton area MLAs until they come back. But thankfully, thanks to the University of Lethbridge being in southern Alberta, they got quite a few Wildrose members. Calgary got quite a few Calgary PCs and Calgary Liberals. I got almost all the Capital Region Caucus this past summer. Now that they're in Edmonton, though, they're kind of in my ballpark, which makes me incredibly happy. I spent my last binge writing every MLA there is. I've requested a meeting with all of them. Some of them will only meet with you if you live in their constituency, at which point I kindly remind them that they probably have a student of ours living in their constituency. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Ultimately, the goal will be to meet with everybody by the end of the year. Whether or not I can accomplish that, we will see. But at this point, I've got, actually, if you want to look at the board, it's in my office with everybody crossed out. We've met with the majority, like actually all of the backbench PCs pretty well. We're working on the front bench. We've got about half the Wildrose and half, we've got about half the opposition at this point, and I'd say anywhere from a third to half of the PCs. So I'll provide you with a full list of that at a later time.
That's a point of information.
Yes.
Just to add on, actually. So you've been meeting with rural MLAs.
Yes. Mainly Lethbridge has been meeting with rural MLAs, but now that they're in town because session is back up again, I am requesting a meeting with all of them. I messaged all the Wildrose members last week. So.
Thank you. With that, we've reached our next 15 minutes, so additional extensions require a two-thirds majority. Yes, Councillor Hodge.
How many people are on the speaker's list?
Sorry?
How many people are on the
speaker's
list?
One.
One of parliamentary.
Yes, Councillor Mohammed.
So, if someone was to move something, then it would just be first principles, and it wouldn't be something specific. It would just be the spirit of...
Yeah, I can... Here, I'll read to you exactly what how first principles are designed in standing orders. Just so we get it right. So, Section 15.1 of Standing Order says, when a bylaw is read the first time, the motion is placed on the order paper, the motion is presented in the following format, principle and or objectives are listed, and the specific wording of legislation is not permitted. Debate is limited to general principles and objectives, and if approved, the motion is referred to bylaw committee. So the main phrase there is debate is limited to general principles and objectives, and that specific wording of legislation is not permitted. Now, when looking at that, I realize it says that when a bylaw is read a first time, it says that the motion is to be placed on the order paper. Of course, council could move to suspend that relevant standing order if they wanted to take a first reading from the floor. So again, we will close question period unless I see a motion to extend, which I do not. So with that, I believe we are at the end of our order paper. Yes, we are. So I would, Councillor Mohammed?
I mean, to be exact, but I just said I could do it.
So you want to, so what I would encourage first is a motion to suspend the standing orders, and if that passes, then you could introduce a motion to, or...
Can I motivate that? Because I feel like if I don't provide a rationale, then I'll be defeated.
You could introduce the motion. You wouldn't be able to debate it or anything like that without suspending the standing order. Because that the beyond sort of putting the motion on the order paper, anything beyond that would be out of order. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so did you want to do that first? Did you want to put the motion on the order paper?
I want to do that.
Okay, so let's do that. So so could you outline your motion for me?
Yeah, so just to suspend the actual motion.
Well, if you want the motion to be sort of on the record first before the motion to suspend, then we'll do that first. Okay.
So Bylaw 3000 talks about DFUs, and the DFUs, they split it up into different fees. Before 2009, you used to be able to, created and all that.
Yeah.
But now they changed it, so if you ask for an increase...
Councilor Mohammed, I'm looking for the principle itself, because you're starting to sort of get into debate, so...
Okay, so in Class C and Class D fees, I would just like it to not include WSC, so that WSC doesn't have to be renewed every 5 years if they pass a referendum that gives them an increase for the DFU.
What is that provision?
Councilor Hansra?
I hope you take this favorably. I know you want to talk about why you're doing this, so hopefully this is an avenue for that. Why do you want it done so urgently today?
Okay, sorry, I'm going to have to... That's not really a point of information. This is getting into debate, unfortunately. I can't allow this. This isn't the way that these would normally work. But
I suspend standing orders and then address that question. And then if council doesn't agree with my rationale, we can just defeat it.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and get a principle here so that we can sort of get it written down. So it would be Hansra moves that Students' Council approve bill, whatever it would be, in first reading based on the following principle. So that's... Oh, sorry, Councillor Mohammed. Sorry, not Councillor Hansra. Councillor Mohammed moves that Students' Council approve bill, whatever, in first reading based on the following principle. And the principle would be... in fact, I'm going to type this out so that I can get it as you would like it. Sorry, folks, I'll fire this up right away. I'm going to get out the specific bylaw so I know what we're dealing with.
Oh, no. Like, it has to pass second reading. It's the deadline. It's the pass. I don't know where to look for that.
So I think if I'm understanding correctly, and again you can clarify, the principle would be I just need to get the name of the fund proper here. The student would not... Actually, I'm going to change that just a little bit. Okay, so I think this is what you're getting at, and again, you can clarify to me, Councillor Mohammed, if this isn't. Where I'm getting most of this from is I'm getting the name of the fund from Bylaw 3000, and I'm getting the part about increase beyond the current rate of exchange from Section 8.9, which talks normally about Class D fees and says shall include Class B fees that are being increased beyond its current rate of change per the schedule. So is that an accurate wording of your principle, or would you care to... Sure. Sorry about that.
All I'm trying to do is just make sure that if WSC has to referendum to increase their DFU amount, that they're not, that they don't have to apply by the grandfather clause, which means they have to renew it every 5 years. So I don't know if that does that.
I mean, what I can do is I can phrase it slightly the other way. Would not become a Class D fee. But to be perfectly honest, it's difficult for me to provide policy advice on the fly, so I need to. I can't really provide a lot more than that. Sorry?
It's just general.
Yeah. But we are sort of bound to the principles in the sense that a bylaw committee comes back with something that reflects the principles but isn't necessarily what you were looking for. It's the principles we wrote and not necessarily your internal thinkings that are sort of taken as priority. So it's important that the principles reflect what your intent is.
I understand these two counselors can probably be
I have a point of parliamentary.
Yes, Councillor Hodgson.
Isn't it generally not ruled out of order for motions from the floor?
Yeah.
This has a...
Well, and like I said, normally it would be. What I'm trying to get at here is... I'm trying to get basically the motion put onto the council, not council agenda in the sense of the paper copy, but the council agenda here, at which point then council can make an evaluation as to whether or not they want to suspend the rules so that the motion would be allowed from the floor. If that doesn't pass, then this motion would die as being ruled out of order, if that makes sense. Again, so we've got Councillor Mohammed moves that Students' Council approve bill whatever in first reading based on the following principle. This is the principle.
Yeah.
Okay. With that, before we could do anything with this, it would have to be immediately ruled out of order unless you're looking to make a motion to suspend the relevant standing orders so that this motion could be dealt with from the floor.
And then, okay, so I want to do
that. Yes, exactly. So do we have a seconder for that motion, for the motion to suspend the relevant standing orders? Governor Kelly? Okay, thank you. Councillor Mohammed, and part of the reason I'm being really clear on this is Nicole's not here, so she's got to listen on the recording as to what's going on. And Nicole, sorry, for the record, the phrasing of the principle is the Student Refugee Fund would not become a Class D fee if it was increased beyond the current rate of exchange as per the schedule. With that, again, Councillor Mohammed, you can... introduce, you can't venture into debate. I will stop you if you venture into debate.
So the reason why this is so time-sensitive?
Not so much the reason why, but explaining what your motion would do from a technical or procedural sense.
Yeah, so...
Don't say because. Yeah, there's a great...
Okay, so the list is essentially trying to... right now there's a... the fees that list is allocated only goes towards tuition. Anything else, it doesn't go towards a winter coat, their mattress, or any other living. So WSSC is trying to increase their...
I'm going to have to stop you. I know where you're going with that. I tell you what, I'm going to try and give a little bit of an introduction that will hopefully clarify it a little bit. And this is perhaps an example of what an introduction can be. So what this motion would do, based on my reading... would be to, if it were passed in principle and then passed in second reading as bylaw based on how the bylaw would come, this motion would essentially keep the Student Refugee Fund as a Class B fee, which does not have the stipulations of Section 9, which says Class C fee and Class D fees shall A, implement an unconditional online opt-out for the total amount of the fee, and B, be reaffirmed by majority support for the total amount of their fee by campus-wide referendum once every 5 years.
Point of inquiry?
Yes, Councillor Speakman.
I think it's point of inquiry. Do you know where it says that WSSC is a Class D fee?
WSSC is not a Class D fee. WSSC is a Class B fee.
But if they do a referendum, then it becomes...
Yeah, so Section 8D says Class D fees... shall include fees established after September 2009, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
B, shall include Class B fees that are being increased beyond its current rate of change per the schedule. So my reading of that is if that fee was increased beyond its current rate of change, which I believe is CPI or something like that, that it would become a Class D fee.
Request confirmation?
Yes, Councillor Chaffoy.
What is the current rate of increase?
I can see if the schedule... I'm not sure I have the schedule in my...
It's usually inflation, isn't it?
There's a couple of different ways to do it, so I will look it up just so that there's no so there's no confusion. So it is CPI. It is indexed to CPI. Okay. So again, we have a seconder for the motion to suspend the rules. I provide an introduction. The motion to suspend the rules is not debatable, not amendable, and requires a 2/3 majority vote. Councillor Mohammed, did you...
So, like, general point is to just explain why it's sometimes as good. So if this passes, I can explain that.
The debate, though, is... I know what you're trying to do, but explaining why something is something, you're getting into a debate. Explaining what it does is explaining what it is. If you're explaining why, that gets into debate. And Robert's rule says you're not allowed to debate motions to suspend the rules, if that makes sense. Okay, so we're going to vote first again on the motion whether or not to suspend the rules, which would allow the motion there to go forward. If anyone's unclear on that, rise on a point of parliamentary inquiry right now. If not, again, not debatable, not amendable, requires two-thirds majority vote. All those in favor? Those opposed? Okay, that motion fails. And do you want it noted?
Yes.
Okay, abstention noted. Councillor Binchik, Councillor Schiavone, abstention noted. Councillor Huang, abstention noted. That's all. Okay. Councillor Mohammed?
So there's no way that I could... have explained why this was so necessary.
Whenever you're using why, it goes into debate. And the rules clearly state that you are not allowed to debate these particular motions.
So I could have just suspended it, explained why, and if council disagreed, I could have voted it down then instead of now.
You would have had to have been able to debate. And you couldn't have been able to... You aren't allowed to debate the motion to suspend the rules because... That's basically listed as a motion you're not allowed to debate. And we wouldn't have been able to get into debate on the motion itself because that motion wouldn't have been in order until we suspended the rules, if that makes sense.
Well, what about...
Councillor Champagne?
The fact that it wasn't available, is it because simply it wasn't on the schedule for tonight's meeting?
So I'll explain. So there were sort of two motions at play here. So the we'll call it the main motion, Councillor Mohammed's actual motion to make a bill in first reading. Technically, that motion isn't in order because standing order says that you can't... basically, standing order says you have to have a bill in first reading on the order paper. You can't move it from the floor. So what Councillor Mohammed was doing or attempting to doing was to suspend that rule to say, okay, that rule doesn't apply here. And if he would have been successful in suspending that rule, then he could have debated his main motion. Now, because a motion to suspend the rules in the rule book says that a motion to suspend the rules is non-debatable, we couldn't also debate that motion, if that makes sense. Any other points of parliamentary inquiry?
Same one.
Councillor Speakman?
It's not a movable motion from the floor because it's a bill, but are other motions from the floor allowed?
Other motions are allowed if, and there's a clause somewhere that sort of vaguely explains it. I'll see if I can find it here. It says, the order of business notwithstanding, Students' Council may designate an order of the day a special order if it cannot be postponed to a future meeting of Students' Council for resolution without risking serious and detrimental consequences to the Students' Union. Basically, that translates to, as I do sometimes with late additions, if I deem them time-sensitive, I can move them onto the order paper. It would be incredibly rare for me to move a motion from the floor onto it. Part of the reason why we have, well, first of all, the main order paper as opposed to late editions that comes out on Friday is A, so that councillors can make an informed decision or do research or whatever the case may be on the topic at hand. And secondly, so that members of the public, if they wish to come and attend or whatnot, would know what's going on and be able to come and attend at that matter. That's why I'm reluctant to move things off of late editions. It does happen when things are time sensitive. When it comes to moving from the floor, I'm even more reluctant because, again, there's sort of less notice available to do these sorts of things. Normally speaking, I wouldn't move something unilaterally from the floor unless there was a very, 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 very good reason for doing so. That being said, council can, of course, always make that motion to move, and that was essentially what the motion to suspend the rules was, if that makes sense. Councillor Graham?
I'd like to move.
A motion to adjourn. If that's a point of parliamentary inquiry, I can take it first, but if not, motion to adjourn. Do we have a seconder for that motion? Councillor Schiavone. All those in favor of adjournment? All those opposed? Okay, that motion carries. We are adjourned. 7:50. Actually, before I take the time, I will take attendance. Give me 1 second. I think it was my attendance list go? Right here. President Kuzmu. Vice President Chellen. Vice President Woods. Vice President Lay. Vice President Lau. Governor Kelly.
Present.
Councillor Battelle.
Present.
Councillor Gordon. Councillor Mills. Councillor Mills, I think you're... She's there? Okay.
Oh, present.
Councillor Hanwell?
Present.
Councillor Bannister?
Present.
Councillor Schiavone?
Present.
Councillor Mohammed?
Present.
Councillor Grilke?
Present.
Councillor Minarski?
Present.
Councillor Valdez? Councillor Corbett?
Present.
Oh, Councillor Horvath, sorry, I said Councillor Corbett first. You're there. Councillor Redman?
No,
Councillor Redman? Councillor Malik?
President.
Councillor Hamid? Councillor Hansra?
Present.
Councillor Lamb?
Present.
Councillor Morris?
Present.
Councillor Sim? Councillor Nguyen?
Present.
Councillor Champagne? Councillor Speakman?
Present.
Councillor Hodgson?
Present.
Councillor Huang?
Present.
Mr. Timbers? Councillor Zhang? Councillor Graham?
Present.
Councillor Binchik?
Present.
Councillor Douglas? Okay, we are adjourned at 7:52. Folks, there was a lot going on at the end of the meeting there, so if you want to talk to me about it more and try and get clarification on what was going on there, happy to chat. Have yourself a good evening.
Why do you have little things on the corner table?
If you could please bring that little ticket on the corner table.